As usual during election seasons, KGVM provides coverage of candidate forums in order to better inform voters. Following is a forum recorded at the Crawford Theater in Bozeman on the evening of May 7th, 2026, featuring Democratic candidates for Montana's Western House District. The candidates were Ryan Bussey, Russell Cleveland, Sam Forstag, and Matt Raines, and the moderator was former Montana Supreme Court Justice Mike Wheat.
The first debate we're going to have is with the candidates for the Western District House of Representatives. I want to describe what the format's going to be a little bit for you folks and for the candidates. We're going to have opening statements from each candidate for 2 minutes, answers to questions that I propound to you. You'll have 2 minutes to answer, and then we'll have closing statements for 2 minutes. Let's start with Sam, and you've got 2 minutes for an opening statement.
Hey, y'all. I'm Sam Forstag. I am a candidate here for Congress in the Western District. I have spent the last 8 years working as a wildland firefighter across Montana and across the West, the last four working as a smoke jumper, and the last two as a leader in my union's local, the National Federation of Federal Employees. At a time when I'm sure I don't have to tell anyone who decided to show up here, it's been a hell of a couple years for a federal employees union. And just last year, between DOGE cuts and all the rest, we lost about a quarter of the Forest Service in this state, and a whole lot of those people were my coworkers and my union members. And a whole lot of those people had dedicated their lives to civil service, doing jobs that they were not getting rich at, jobs that they were doing because they cared about our public lands and still knew something about public service. And when we reached out to Brian Zinke's office time after time after time, we got crickets. So I decided that if they're going to come for all my coworkers and my union members' jobs, well, I'm going to come for his. Yeah. And I think we got a pretty good shot of it. He has dropped out of this race, as you've heard. And he did that in part because he saw what was coming. What's coming is all of us. It is all of us. We're here on this stage. How did I get here? Well, growing up, I was raised largely by my mom. She is an ICU nurse who had to pick up extra shifts to provide for my little sister and I. And I remember being the 9-year-old who's worried that mom is working too much. My dad, when he was getting his feet underneath him, he relied on food stamps to keep the fridge full for us, and thank God for that program because it did just what it needed to. It helped him get through and earn his teaching certificate, and he is still Teacher Mick, teaching a room full of kindergartners today. When I was going to school at the university, I worked 2 to 3 jobs at a time the entire time, and I remember sometimes finishing my third shift of the day at 1 a.m. and still having a paper to write and thinking, this is not how it's supposed to work, and that is not how it's supposed to work. And for too many Montanans, that is the experience of living in this state right now. That does not have to be the case. I'm running to fix that. We can do that, and I would love your help with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Ryan Bussey.
Ryan Bussey here, running for this seat. I want to thank everybody for coming. Feels a little bit to us, I think, like we've been on the road as a band here. We've done like 15 concert dates, I think. And I see a bunch of you here. I think you're like deadheads. You follow us around. Several of you have been at these things. Look, we joke about this, and we try to find humor, but I want to acknowledge that nothing our country is facing right now is normal, and a lot of it's not humorous. When we have tariffs, just another restaurant in Kalispell where I live went out of business yesterday because the tourist economy is in the dumps because we're threatening our neighbor to the north, and they can't afford to buy the groceries needed for that restaurant anymore. And when we have ICE agents zip-tying kids in classrooms, killing American citizens, none of that stuff's normal. And I want to really extend my gratitude to all of you for being here, trying to make the world a better place, because it's time that we buckle down and win an election. If you care about, as I do, this place that has made me a better person, giving people a chance like it gave me and my wife 31 years ago in Kalispell. Sarah and I were married on the banks of the Flathead River there 27 years ago. I have 2 boys now, 18 and 21, and I'm really worried that it's not going to give my boys the kind of chance that it gave me. That's not normal either. We should elect somebody with integrity and that has stood up and fought for this place, because it's going to be a fight in D.C. to stop and reverse some of the stuff that's going on and then fight for something better. We can do that. I've been doing that. Thank you for being here and helping us. We're excited to go win this thing, and appreciate you being here tonight. Thank you.
Russ Cleveland.
Yeah, we can't really see you up here, so I'm hoping I can hear you. Who's ready to make Montana purple again? Me too. I think this is a year for us to take this House seat back for the first time since Pat Williams served in the U.S. House. Are you guys ready for that too? This is the year. I'm Russ Cleveland, and I started running for this seat 394 days ago. This is my 394th day out on the trail. And I can tell you, all this time out in Montana, visiting every corner, every county, almost every town, meeting tens of thousands of people, has really inspired a different level of hope in me to do just that this year. I'm a dad, I'm a coach, I'm a Navy veteran, a former small business owner, and I have a different level of hope for what is next that is rooted in integrity. And I think what we have to think about moving forward, something that I hope you listen for today, is this idea that we need a different type of leader to lead us for the next chapter of Montana and for this nation. We are facing unique circumstances, something that calls for a different type of leadership that's willing to hold the powerful accountable, that's willing to start putting handcuffs on corporations that have far too much power in this country, someone who's willing to lift up veterans and small businesses, lift up women and immigrants, start focusing on things like education and childcare and fixing this housing crisis that we're in. And I have all of the experience to do those things. I ran a company of my own, Rocky Mountain Kids, for almost a decade that was a childcare company, and grew it to serve over 9,000 families across 42 locations. Education and childcare are something I'm deeply passionate about. I have 6 kids of my own at home. But my reason for doing this is personal, and I hope to share some of that story with you throughout the night tonight. Thank you all for being here with us. Let's take back Montana.
Matt Raines.
Well, thank you, Gallatin Democrats, for hosting the event. Mike, for moderating. I'm Matt Raines, obviously running for Congress. And really, like Russ was saying, it's been 30 years since Democrats have held this seat. And to me, the reason I threw my hat in the ring was, what is the kryptonite that we can finally take down the GOP candidate and flip this? And to me, that all goes through one question. What kind of Montanan are you? That is what's going to be asked first and foremost. We're going to have a debate up here. We're going to talk about some great things. None of it matters if we can't beat them on that first question. Because that is what this district, that is what Montana is about. What kind of Montanan are you? And for me, I mean, I go back to the 1860s with my family. Family ranch goes back to the 1890s. So I got deep, deep roots here. Montana's in my DNA. As a West Point cadet, I was from Montana, nominated here. It was Conrad Burns. But I served in the military. I was an Army captain from Montana, served in Iraq, flew Blackhawks. Following that, I traveled over 60 countries doing humanitarian photography. I was in Africa, Middle East, Asia, Central Asia, the Rohingya genocide. I was one of the first foreign photographers on site there, documenting before anybody else had heard of it. Following that, I had a 10-year-old West Point engineering degree I figured I should probably use. So I came back and took a job inspecting power plants. So I have a deep understanding of how our national grid works. I inspected plants all across the country. Was probably doing about $1 million worth of repair findings. Got my MBA from Washington University, met my future wife. She had a horse, I had a horse ranch, made it back to Montana. And so back here, besides running the family ranch, took a job last 5 years working at Montana Farmers Union. Amazing opportunity, started the first of its kind USDA meat processing co-op in the nation, bringing revenue streams to Montana ranchers. So those are the kind of solutions, that's the kind of dedication to this state that I have. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Now we can get into the questions. The first question deals with fuel and energy, and all four of you mentioned some aspect of that. The cost of gas and diesel has shot through the ceiling since our war on Iran. These high costs are having and will continue to have a dramatic impact on anyone reliant on fuel to make a living and or just make ends meet. It's especially have a devastating impact on our farm and ranch community. So, Sam, you will go first. When elected, what are your plans for lowering the high cost of fuel and stabilizing the energy marketplace?
Yeah, this is a great place to start because this is exactly what our job will be in Congress, is to do our damn duty and conduct some congressional oversight of the executive branch, because right now we are being told that we can afford billions of dollars a day to rain chaos and cruelty overseas in a war that none of us asked for and none of us wanted, but we cannot afford basic public services like Medicaid. We cannot afford to maintain SNAP benefits at the level that a whole lot of people who are already on the edge need them. So what I would do is I would refuse to vote for any appropriations package that continues to fund this needless war in Iran. What I would do is I would work to repeal the authorization for the use of military force that has been on the books for over two decades and that cedes far too much power to the executive branch to drag us in to foreign wars and on faraway continents that none of us want, because there are far more important places for us to be spending our money. And right now, what we are living through is the tail end of decades of policy decisions in which every time we have a budget shortfall, be it at the state or the federal level, well, they cut public services. They cut things like our public lands agencies. If it's at the state level, where I got my start in advocacy work back in 2017, what I saw during that budget shortfall is deep cuts to our healthcare services in this state. And over the following 6 years, when we had budget surpluses, do you think that they reinvested that money in rebuilding our mental health system, mental healthcare system? No. What they did is they invested that money in tax cuts for the richest people in this country, year after year after year, and that is the same story that we are seeing at the federal level, where the biggest priority that the people in control right now could find was the big, beautiful bill. With $3 trillion of tax cuts that went to the highest earners in this country and to cutting the corporate tax rate again. So let's reform our tax system. Let's make sure that nobody making over $1 million a year is paying a lower share of their income than somebody making $80,000 a year and barely getting by in this state. And let's invest that money in housing and healthcare and childcare so that we can all afford to live a good life and maybe have some time to go recreate on our public lands while we're at it.
Ryan?
Look, I know if you went to fill up your car today, if you've experienced much of what we've felt in the last 2 years, it can feel pretty dark and hopeless. Affordability, this word that encompasses everything we feel about whether we can afford to live here or not, is not something that just happened to this. This was not a meteor that fell from space. It was not a physical law like gravity. This happened, and here's the hopeful part. This thing that we're experiencing that's making it hard for us to afford to live here, making our fuel prices go up, is a choice that we have made as a country because we put the wrong people in office. We have a Congress now that refuses to stand up to an out-of-control administration. When this administration says we're going to rush off into war, even if we don't have a plan, even though we know Iran will shut down the Strait of Hormuz and it will damage every American citizen and fuel prices will go up, does your representative stand up and say, no, don't do that, I've got a bunch of people in Western Montana that's going to hurt? No, he doesn't do that. He claps. You don't have representation, and you deserve representation. When your power bills are going up every day, does your representative stand up and say, look, don't pull the incentives for wind and solar, because wind and solar is the cheapest form of energy. My constituents need cheap energy. They don't need more expensive energy. Does your representative do that? No, he doesn't. He claps. We're here because you deserve representation, because my kids deserve representation, because your kids and your friends and the people who live here and the people who make this community go deserve representation. We don't have to have more expensive gasoline. We don't have to have more expensive electricity. We don't have to make choices that pull the cheapest forms of energy off the grid while we continue to incentivize the most expensive forms of energy. We can make better choices. You should demand that of your representatives. I promise you I will fight for every single one of those things.
Russ?
Yeah, I think we could start with more of those stickers that say, I did that, and it's Trump, on the gas pump that we see. That'd be a good start. That's what they did to Biden, and it swayed so many people's opinion. But I tell you what, this is unlike that situation. This is not an OPEC issue. This truly is one man that is driving the cost for all of us. The overreach of executive power, of presidential power, is truly the problem in many of these cases that we see, and probably many of the things that we'll talk about tonight. And so that is what we have to focus on. But really, the core issue in this country that we don't talk about enough, and I know we have representatives here collecting signatures to start fighting this, is money in politics. When we look at the overwhelming power that our petroleum industry has on Capitol Hill, that is the reason we get into these situations. Because I can tell you who's not doing bad right now, simply based off of supply and demand, are companies like BP, are companies like ConocoPhillips. They're doing fine, because the price per barrel is through the roof. But you and I are paying more at the pump, and we can't afford it. We are getting stretched on energy costs, on housing costs, on healthcare costs, on childcare costs. We can go down the list. And yet so many people in this state voted because they wanted lower cost of gasoline. They wanted to stop being the country of forever wars. And where are we now? This is an opportunity. And I can tell you, this is one of the biggest areas where we see a bridge to help move people into this tent to say, you've been fooled, and it's okay, but it's time to come back and start fixing these issues. And so when we talk about specific items, we need to limit that executive overreach. We need to reel in that power and push those decisions back to Congress. We need to cut money out of politics once and for all so that corporations no longer control our political system. And it starts right here in Montana with programs like the Montana Plan, and it starts with people like me who are individual contributions only because I'm not beholden to these corporations. That's how we make change on day one, starting in 2027 when I take office. Thank you.
Matt?
So lots to cover in this question. To start with the war, we all saw this coming. And so, I mean, I've served in Iraq, and tactically, operational, strategically, this was a horrible idea in how it was executed. We knew that this was coming down the pipeline. And so that is this administration, this is why we have to flip this seat. The urgency has never been greater. We have to put checks and balances so this doesn't happen, and we can make sure that Congress takes back the power to declare war. On top of that, Montana's ranchers and farmers. I just wrote my check for fertilizer for the hayfield. It sucked. $130 to fill up my truck to come here and bitch and complain about what's going on out there. It sucks. We can do way better. There's not a product that you're gonna go to the store and buy or get delivered to your house that isn't touched by fuel. Inflation is gonna hit us hard here shortly. And we're gonna feel it. And this administration's gonna play games. And they're going to try to win their votes and buy their votes going into November. We have to focus and make sure that we flip this. Ranchers and farmers, local Montanans are going out. They're firing up their tractors to start haying, seeding out there. They are feeling the pain right now. That's hitting their bottom line. Before they've even started, their profit margins on their operations for the year are already down probably 10%. They changed their whole operations because of that. That means that we have an opportunity right now. As Democrats, we can take this and we can present to them and give them somebody that they can pivot to. Ranchers and farmers, doesn't matter where on the political spectrum they are, they know that when their operations are under attack, they're ready for something different. So this is our opportunity. Let's get out there and let's bring them back to the party. Democrats made rural Montana. It's time to remind them of that.
I think you guys have been reading my notes here because you're talking about everything I've got written down here. Okay, the next issue I want to focus on is housing. Nationally, the cost of housing has increased 60% since 2019, and in Montana, it's doubled since 2017. This forces many folks into the rental market where rental costs are very high. So we'll start with you, Ryan, and the question is, what specific proposals do you have to resolve this continuing problem in the housing market?
Here again, we're here because, not because of a single thing, and if anybody tells you they can fix the housing market by pressing a single easy button, that's a lie. It can't be fixed that easily. But we have the wrong priorities. Again, the people that we sent to Washington, D.C., this guy that has this business card that says he's representing you and my boys, that's not happening. We're spending $191 billion on ICE. We've chosen to do that as a country. That's more than all but 14 militaries on the face of the planet. That's more than the U.S. Marine Corps. We're not spending any of that money, any of that $191 billion. We're told that we can't push these various buttons that I'm about ready to describe on housing, and that's wrong. We can make better choices. None of these things are going to solve it, but why don't we have stronger, more aggressive first-time homebuyer assistance? Why don't we have a federal program that guarantees low interest payments? Why don't we have more federal assistance for building out infrastructure for new affordable housing units? Because many times, what slows down the building and adding of units in a place like Bozeman is the fact that water and sewer is not there, and the developers can't afford to do it, and they can't wait on that. There are a few programs through ARPA, through the Biden administration, that did that, and you're going to see the payoff here in the next year or so in Bozeman with units that are 150, 180, 190 units. We could be doing more of that. We don't have to spend $1.6 billion a day on a war in Iran. We could be pushing more of these buttons. I have dedicated myself in this campaign to never once voting for, advocating for, speaking for, or doing anything to assist any program that pushes wealth further upward. What I'm talking about here with these housing programs, you deserve, the people of Montana deserve. We should be always, and I will always push the wealth and the money back to the working people where it needs to be. And in housing, it's one of our biggest problems. You don't have to go around the district more than 5 minutes to hear that housing is a humongous problem. When we're less affordable than the state of California, that's a problem. Let's make better decisions.
Russ?
Yeah, this is where the rubber meets the road for me. So, look, the only reason I was able to buy my first home as a veteran was because the VA loans are no money down. It was zero money down to get into a home and start accruing equity. The only reason my employees, my 200 employees when I was running Rocky Mountain Kids, were able to afford their cost of living and their housing was because I paid them 30% more than my competition. The only reason teachers in my community when I moved home were able to find housing and that the school was able to actually recruit teachers was because we built affordable housing, a sevenplex that was dedicated to teacher housing. Look, this is not a one-stop shop solution, but I can tell you the things that we need to focus on are, number one, wages. We haven't seen wages increase in this country for nearly 50 years in line with inflation and productivity. That's the start. I propose a 50-to-1 cap on executive to frontline worker wages so that people, the working class that's creating that productivity, actually starts making a livable wage. If we would have stayed in line with that since 1968, the minimum wage would be $25 an hour right now. But we can't turn that on overnight because we will cripple small businesses across this state. We also need to get these tariffs out of here that are driving up the cost of lumber costs that are largely imported from places like Canada. That's another thing. I worked in lending for over a decade. There's massive lending reform we can do to get more people into homes with no money down. The average cost of a home in Montana is over $600,000 right now, and I can tell you with a 20% down payment, you're boxing most people out with a down payment of $120,000 just to get considered for a loan. And by easing the burden on that home buying market, you also ease the burden on the rental market as well. These are real solutions that we can do if we have a Congress and a representative from Montana who actually understands how these systems work and who has done the work themselves. And I've done it in wages, I've done it in home building myself with my own hands, and I've done it on the lending side as well. We can fix this issue in places like Bozeman, and with your help, I can get there. Thank you.
Matt?
So I recently got asked to tell some people what's something about the district that nobody knows. You know, you want to be like, oh, it's the most beautiful district in the country. But the truth is, and I told him, I'm like, we weren't ready for COVID. The influx of people rapidly coming into a place that, you know, had been too hard to get to, too far away. They suddenly realized that Montana was gorgeous, and we weren't ready. So the housing question, first of all, we have to find ways federally to fund buildup of our infrastructure. Pandora's box open, people are going to keep coming here. We're not going to stop that. We have to expand. We have to build the roads, the electric, the septic, the wells, the water, as needed to build more supply out there. And then that supply has to come to the low-income and middle-income type houses, single-family homes. So a young family that wants to move into the area, raise some kids, those type of houses. Contractors. We have to find incentives through the tax system to make sure that contractors don't go cherry pick the mansions, that they come, they start building homes for us. And then I own some rental properties. When I was in the military, I'd buy a house, I'd PCS, I'd rent it out. It's tailored against somebody having a second home. We need to find solutions because right now corporations don't care. They've bought up a whole crap load of our houses and they're Airbnb-ing them out there. That's hurting us. That is falsely inflating how much we want or need to go pay for a house if we want to just like move down the road from our family. We need to get corporations out of Montana. We need to put Montana names on Montana mortgages. We can do that. That will help bring the home prices back down to where they actually should be without that inflated false appreciation that those corporations are putting in there. Thank you.
Sam?
Yeah, so we are in a housing crisis right now, and it is worse than it has ever been in recent memory, but it is not new. Lots of folks, not just in the last 6 months, since affordability became the watchword for politicians across the country, but for the last 5 or 10 years, most of the folks I know, anytime I go to a bar, we're talking about the fact that our rent has doubled or tripled or worse in the last 5 or 10 years. Anytime I'm hanging out with friends, we're talking about the fact that, well, there's a whole lot of people in a whole generation in this state who cannot conceive of ever owning a home because of how quickly property values have risen in places where people have been born and raised and spent their whole lives. And so what do we do when we're in a crisis? We need to pull every lever that we can so that folks in that generation, people who are at this point losing faith in whether government can actually address a crisis, can have that faith and have hope again. And the three levers that we can pull when it comes to fixing a housing market that is broken are supply, subsidy, and stability. When it comes to supply, we need to make investments upstream and make sure that there are more apprenticeship slots available for people who are ready to go into the trades and should not have to wait or pay money to make sure that they are getting trained up to be the folks we need building those houses. When it comes to subsidy, we should look to the models that work. We have programs like the Community Development Block Grant, where we built affordable housing for decades as a country and in which we have not increased investment in decades. That is a problem. If we can afford $3 trillion in tax cuts for the richest people in this country and for large corporations, we can afford to repeal those and invest some of that money in programs like that. And lastly, it's stability. And when I'm sitting down with Debbie, not so far from here over at King Arthur Mobile Home Park, whose lot rent has nearly doubled in the last 5 years, and Debbie tells me, Sam, when I was your age, if old folks had to live like this, I would be so angry. We should be so angry. And being angry is not enough. We need a policy solution. And the policy solution is to say that private equity firms, 23 of which now own over 1,800 mobile home parks across this country, should not be allowed to buy up the last affordable housing option that a lot of people like Debbie have. Let's ban large corporations from owning residential homes. Let's ban private equity from buying up our mobile home parks, and let's get them out of the housing market.
Okay, Russ, you'll get this next question. It has to do with healthcare. Our healthcare system is under increasing pressure from massive government cuts to critical safety net programs such as Medicaid, Medicare, and Obamacare in general. Furthermore, the rising cost of medical insurance and the cost of medical care and hospital benefits is placing quality health care financially out of reach of many folks. What are your specific proposals for making health care more affordable?
Yeah, great question. How about Medicare for all? That's what I'm supporting. I'm the dad who sat in that hospital room while his little girl was undergoing leukemia treatment, and these insurance companies that I paid for with the best insurance I could find as a small business owner were sending me $300,000 bills for a month of leukemia treatment for my daughter. While she was fighting for her life for 8 months, we continued to receive those bills until the very end. Madison lost her battle to leukemia, and that's what brought us home to Montana. We realized we needed to slow down and be close to family and appreciate the life that Montana offers for many families. But just a year after moving home, my youngest daughter was diagnosed with a different rare lung disease called pulmonary capillaritis, where your lungs slowly bleed out. There's only one medication that can fix it. Any guesses on whether insurance covered that medication? No, they did not. It took us 18 months of fighting that insurance company to get that added to their register. Meanwhile, they had an allergist in some back room that was trying to go against the only pulmonologist in six states that knew how to treat this rare disease. That dose of medicine that she needed every 3 to 4 weeks cost $10,000 for a medication that just costs a few hundred dollars to make. We should not accept having our medical system in this country be part of Wall Street. We should not have our medical system in this country continue to drive profits that push families underwater, resulting in a 60% bankruptcy that is medically related in this country. I'm not okay with that. 80% of Americans are not okay with that. Mexico just passed universal health care. We can do it too. But we have to get money out of politics. We have to start representing families the way they deserve. And healthcare is a human right. It is not a Wall Street business, and it's about time we start treating it like that.
Matt.
So, first and foremost, with this one, like, when I get to Congress, we have to get the ACA subsidies funded. That is the biggest hit to Montanans right now in this state, and that's my priority. I'm not going there to solve the world's problems. I'm going there to take care of Montanans today. 1 in 4 Montanans in our rural communities rely on those subsidies, and they've taken a $500 to $1,000 hit. They get nothing more for it. It's like a new car payment. We have to get that funded. And then what the Big Beautiful Bill did to us, the attack on our rural healthcare system, I mean, I live 45 minutes from an emergency room. I know a lot of people that are an hour, hour and a half, any direction they go. We have to fund our healthcare system, not just like put Band-Aids on it, not just give it telehealth. We need to expand our system so Montanans can easily get to a facility and see quality, get quality treatment. And then, again, the big beautiful bill, the attack on Medicaid, pisses me off. They're basically taking $5 from Peter and paying Paul $1. And wherever that $4 in the middle is, this administration just took it and ran. They have stopped paying Medicaid perpetually. And what they're doing is they're giving Montana $230 million that has to be spent by October. Why October? Well, it's right before the elections. All these hospitals are going to get new equipment, new things, just little like splurges that doesn't really matter to them, but they're going to like, you know, spend the money they have to spend. And Republicans are going to pat themselves on the back all the way to the election box. We have to stop that. We have to flip the seat, get in there, and make sure that our healthcare system for Montanans. I mean, shit, when I was a kid, I got doctored out of the vet bag. My parents were too scared to go to the hospital. And we're headed right back there. We can do way better than that. We have to take care of us here first. Our delegation doesn't give a damn about us. We need somebody in there that will put Montanans first.
Sam?
How do we fix healthcare? Well, we start by just acknowledging the truth that our healthcare system is broken. That if I tear my calf on a wildfire and limp off 3 days later and go to the only orthopedist in town, just to learn that I'm out of network, so I'm still paying for that out of pocket despite paying my monthly premiums, that is not a functioning healthcare system. That if I'm talking to a gal in Libby who is paying $38,000 a year for her healthcare because she owns a small business and doesn't qualify for the marketplace plans, she knows that that is a broken healthcare system. And how do we fix a broken system? We look at the part of our system that works. It's Medicare, in large part. And we plug up the gaps in Medicare because vision and dental and hearing are part of real comprehensive healthcare coverage. And we give everybody in this country, regardless of age, the choice to join Medicare. And if we can do that, if we can build and expand subsidies so that is free healthcare for every single working person in this country, I would offer you that not a whole lot of people like me are going to decide to stay on United Health Insurance's plan because it ain't working. And if the private health insurance corporations have got a plan that they think can outcompete Medicare, well, I would love to know where they've been keeping it for the last 30 years because I have not seen it. That is how we fix healthcare. And more broadly, we need to make sure that the providers on the ground, rural hospitals, can actually stay in business serving people who are covered under Medicare or Medicaid. We need to raise those reimbursement rates so that they're not taking a loss. And we need to make serious investments to rebuild our country's mental health care system, because over the last 10 years, I've been working between fire seasons doing organizing and advocacy. And one of the groups I worked with was the Montana Coalition to Solve Homelessness that we built with the HRDC here in town and a dozen other shelters. And if you go to any shelter across this state, about a third of the folks there are grappling with mental illness for which they have no access to services. That is a policy decision. And it is a policy decision that leads all of us paying so much more for the least effective, least compassionate solutions when folks' only option is to show up at the shelter or to end up in the state hospital and to be discharged behind the shelter in Butte. We can do so much better than that as a country. We have the resources. Let's spend them where we need them.
Ryan?
So you deserve a representative who is going to look you in the eye and tell you what has to be done. And on healthcare, we've got two problems. The first one is short-term, and we've got to plug, first, these Medicaid cuts, work requirements coming down the line. It's an immoral thing that we're doing to our state. We're kicking kids off of healthcare. A lot of Native American kids, elderly people. People are going to die because we have reduced our Medicaid coverage. We haven't, but our Congress has. It's an immoral thing that we're doing, why we're giving tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country. We've also cut back on our ACA tax credits. More than 77,000 Montanans rely on the ACA. Those two things, the second your representative, your new representative, who's up here on this stage today, the first thing they have to do when they get to Washington, D.C., is fix those two short-term things. Because without it, Montanans are going to die and rural hospitals are going to go out of business. Simple as that. The second thing that has to happen is you deserve a representative, and I think the Democratic Party needs to focus on somebody who will attack big things. I'm running hard on universal health care. We are 50 years behind the curve in this country, okay? We're the only, and I was just at an event in Drummond. Guy there, he's a logger, he told me a cat fell over, a caterpillar kicked a tree over, fell over on his legs, broke both of his legs. All the way on the life flight, he was worried about whether that was the last time he was ever gonna see his ranch, because of medical bankruptcy. We're the only country, you know, the only industrialized country in the world who has people that worry about that. That's wrong. But to fix it, it's not just Republicans we got to get out of the way. There are way too many Democrats with their hands in the pocket of big health insurance that makes $74 million a year, okay? And if you want to fix this, you need to elect a Democrat that's not afraid to nudge other Democrats out of the way. You deserve better, and it's time for Democrats to stop talking about this and start delivering. One of the reasons we have Donald Trump is because this hasn't happened. We can do better, and Democrats have to stand up and do better.
You are listening to KGVM Bozeman, presenting a forum featuring Democratic candidates for Montana's Western House District, which took place on May 7th, 2026.
All right, let's talk a little bit now about child care. In order for families to make ends meet, both parents usually need to work. And for those with preschool age children, the cost of child care is not only very expensive, but in many cases, out of reach of some folks. Do you have a plan for making child care more affordable for Montana's working families?
This is absolutely a key issue, and we don't really get to education as much anymore. It's a state issue to me. States need to fund pre-K all the way up. and make sure that the education system is available. We have a lot of Montanans that we're hard workers. We want to get out there and start getting back into the grind, whether it's you're on a farm or a ranch or you're a teacher. Having a kid should not be a limitation and a liability to where you don't have that option. And right now, because of the wages, because of the cost of living, because of the affordability, we are not set up to make sure that those parents have those options. And so absolutely, federally, we can support the states, but to me, this is a state issue that needs to make sure that we get out there. And I mean, again, it goes back to education statewide or across the board. I mean, traveling the world, I could tell you wherever I went exactly how much investment a country put into their kids. It's embedded in everything that happens. You can't put a single dollar into what it's the single best investment that a state, a country can do. And when we limit them early on as children of pre-K, and we force those parents to have to either balance the two jobs, or they go to take a job and the pre-K, the child care takes the entire amount, we are totally debilitating our system. So we absolutely need to find that funding. Thank you.
Sam?
You might see a common theme emerging here. How do we make sure that people, working people in this state, in this country, can afford childcare? We invest the resources. We invest resources in universal childcare and pre-K for every single American, because that is going to drive down costs across our economy. And because if New Mexico can pass universal childcare for every citizen in their state, and they're not a state full of wide-eyed liberals, they're a whole lot like us in Montana, then we can do it here. And we can do it in this country. And just like all of this, how do we pay for that? Well, what I would propose is a 30% minimum effective income tax rate on all forms of income for every dollar after $1 million made a year. Because there's no reason that somebody making over $1 million a year should be paying a lower income tax rate than somebody who's making $80,000 a year and struggling to afford childcare. Right now in this state, the average annual cost of childcare is just shy of $19,000 a year. The average wage in Montana is about $60,000 a year. People who are already struggling to afford a roof over their head, people who have lived through experiences like me over much of the last decade, where I am spending most of my income just on a 980 square foot place, trying to keep that place under me, do not have that kind of expendable income to spend on quality childcare. And if we invest upfront as a country in childcare and things like Head Start, that work and that improve educational outcomes downstream for people like me who had a place to go when I was 4 years old, thanks to Head Start, we will all be so much better off, and we will have a populace that is not only living better, we will have a populace that is better educated, and we will have people who can actually afford to go to work. When I go to ASUM Childcare over in Missoula and I talk to Vicky, who runs that program, there are far too many stories of people who've had to drop out of school because they cannot afford to send their kids to childcare. That is shameful. We can afford to pay for these things as a country. We just need everybody to carry their own damn weight, just like the rest of us.
Ryan?
If there are young parents here tonight who are struggling with health care or child care, or if you have kids that are struggling with their child care, it's not, I want to be really clear, it's not wrong or greedy or controversial for you to request that you want your government to do better and help you. The reason that we're not doing this is because the people who don't want working people to have a better life have better lobbyists, better attorneys. They can pay people off a lot better than all of us. We're supposed to have representatives who work for us and our government. That's what this is all about. Ryan Zinke, who's supposed to be your representative, in the Big Beautiful Bill, three words that I struggle to string together, in that bill alone, his personal tax benefit, depending on the tax year, is between $230,000 and $731,000 per year. And yet, you are told that we can't fix the thresholds for federal programs like Best Beginnings. He can't take the time to get a legislative fix to fix the income thresholds in a federal grant program like that. That's wrong. In fact, not only should he be doing that, we need to be doing more of that. So we can, again, a common theme here, we can make better choices. We don't have to shovel all this income further up and give people like Zinke $750,000 tax break while we refuse to help people who need childcare. I helped run and grow a business in Kalispell. Started it from nothing. Recruited people to work there. Hired lots of good Montana folks there. And you know what I never heard one time was, gee, I hope I come to Kalispell and the childcare is really expensive. Or gosh, I hope the schools suck. Or man, I hope the housing's really expensive. Right? So this isn't something you need to feel guilty about. It's good business. It's important for our state. It's important for our towns and our economy. And we should demand it, not just let it pass and let them keep shoveling wealth further upward.
Russ?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm so happy to hear these candidates talking about this subject. This, whether it's housing or healthcare or childcare, these are platform items I've been running on for the entire, over a year now that I've been running as a candidate. I'm happy they've adopted these. However, here's the difference, is I'm the one on this stage who built a childcare company. A childcare company that went on to serve over 9,000 families, real families. A childcare company that charged parents close to 30% less than our competitors. Grew it to be Colorado's largest childcare providers. Helped them navigate really tough situations like when COVID hit and kids were pushed out of the schools and parents had nowhere to send them and essential workers couldn't work. We were the first company in the country to stand up remote learning centers, virtual learning labs so kids could get back into community centers and churches and continue learning and parents could get back to work. A company that helped universal pre-K get launched across all of Colorado, one of the first states to do it. Knowing that those learning outcomes of those 3 and 4 year olds, as we're seeing 3, 4 years later, have raised those learning outcomes high above benchmark because of the social and emotional learning opportunities that those kids get. So universal childcare is the option. It is the answer. Because for every dollar that we invest in childcare, it's a $4 to $9 return on local economy. It is not a welfare program. It's an investment. And you know who benefits from it the most? You know who benefits from it the most? Are women. Because women are disproportionately affected by being pushed out of the workplace because of the stereotype of assuming that they need to stay at home with kids. We don't need to settle for that. We can demand better. Our kids benefit, our small businesses benefit because they have more employees, families benefit by multiplying their familial income. This is a net positive for everyone. Rising tides raise all ships, and it's done through universal childcare. And we can do it this election.
Good job, gentlemen. We're going to move on now to some foreign policy questions. Always gets people excited. Many of Trump's foreign policy decisions have had and will continue to have a negative impact on our domestic economy. Tonight, our questions will focus primarily on the Iranian war and tariffs, and you've all already mentioned those several times. So the first question is related to the Iranian war, and it will, Sam, you'll be the first to answer this. The Iranian war, frankly, this is an issue I didn't think we would be worried about this election cycle, but here we are. And just as a side note, as I was driving in here, I got a news flash on my phone that said, we're now striking Iran again. So the bombs and missiles and everything are sort of flying again. Without the consent of Congress or approval of the American people, Trump has unilaterally plunged us into another costly Middle Eastern war, the financial and economic impacts of which are not only currently devastating, but will surely last long past this election cycle. The question to you, Sam, is, are you prepared to tighten the purse strings on this war and to rein in Trump's abuse of war powers and support diplomacy to end this war?
Absolutely. Right now, it is not a new story. It is an old story that is just on overdrive, like so much of what we're talking about here. We as a country are all too happy to shower wealth on armaments and chaos and cruelty overseas while people are living in poverty, while record numbers of people are living in the backs of their trucks or in trailers right here in Bozeman and across western Montana. That is shameful, and that is far from the wise investment of our resources that we deserve from our leaders in Congress. So as I said at the beginning, I would refuse to vote for any appropriations package that continues to fund this needless war in Iran. And while we're at it, let's make sure that any money that we are sending overseas for things like military aid have strict humanitarian conditions attached to them, because we have better things to spend our money on than bombing foreign countries, whether it is a war that we are starting in Iran or whether it is trying to enact regime change in South America. This is not how we make ourselves richer. This is not how we make ourselves safer. And you know, what got me into this race in large part was living through the Doge cuts in which the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, was put in charge of some levers of power and used those to squeeze poor and working people, to squeeze our public services, the few that we still had access to, for a little bit more so they could squeeze a bit more profit out of all of us. And while he was doing that to the Forest Service, you know what federal agency took the worst cuts in terms of staffing reductions? It was the VA. And we should not be spending a penny overseas on new wars until we have made sure that we are doing right by the people that we have asked to do their duty overseas in the wars of the past. We are failing at that right now. And the broader story here, it was not just attacks on the VA, it was not just attacks on our public lands agencies. They completely got rid of one of the best investments on our dollar in terms of saving lives and helping poor people, not just here, but across the world, when they eliminated USAID. That is shameful. If we want to talk about foreign investments that can actually make us safer as a country, it is not just this hard power. It is not just dropping bombs on a country so that we all end up paying more at the gas pump. It is actually exercising our soft power. It is actually exercising a wise foreign policy in which we know and understand that sometimes the compassionate solution is also the most cost-effective solution. Sometimes making sure that people are not going hungry in a faraway country is the way that we make sure we don't end up paying a whole lot more down the line. We are failing at that as a country, and we deserve a Congress that is willing to fight for that. That is what I would like to do as your congressperson.
Before you start, Ryan, and the rest of you, I forgot to start the clock for Sam. So Sam, you got a little extra there, so I'll pass it on to each of you, okay? Okay, go ahead, Ryan.
Yes, of course, we have to rein in this out-of-control president administration. Look, it goes bigger than just the war, and we'll get to the war in just a second, but if you spend half your time spending all your money on hammers, eventually you're going to find a nail, and we have an out-of-control military-industrial complex on which we spend way too much money, okay? They just requested a $1.5 trillion defense budget. While we're in the middle of this unjustified, dangerous war that's costing us $1.6 billion a day, it's not like Trump wasn't told this is going to drive your fuel prices up. He was told this because every other president has been told this, and yet he did it. And do any of your representatives stand up and say anything about it? No, they don't. That should anger you. It really should. So yes, we have to rein in this president with war powers. We have to rein in the out-of-control spending on our military budget, because we are spending too much money on hammers, and eventually we do find nails. We've done it time. We did it in Iraq. We're doing it here. We spent too much time in Afghanistan. I'm happy that we have a competent, amazing military force who can defend us, but it should be about defending us. This idea that they have changed it to the, again, it's tough for me to say these things because they really, it's almost that they're a joke, but they're not a joke. The Department of War, come on. This is the Department of Defense. And if we really want to fix America, we really want power overseas, we really want to be respected, it's not because we run over there and flex all of our military equipment. It's because we should do what we've done for the previous 75 years. We take care of ourselves here. We don't gut voting rights here. We don't gut our own economy here. We don't gut our democracy here and then act like a wartime effort is going to get us respect overseas. We don't shred USAID. We don't laugh at soft power. We demand better of ourselves, just like Democrats should do. As a country, we should demand better of ourselves and not take this easy way out, just going over and flexing our muscle and spending money on the military. It's going to lead to dangerous things, and it's costing you. It's costing all of us here at home.
Russ.
Yeah. There's a really sobering part of this conflict that I think we as Americans in this 24/7 news cycle, we digest and we move on. But in the early days of this conflict, we dropped a bomb on a school. We killed over 150 children. Every single one of us in this audience should be irate, should be disgusted, should demand better. As a veteran, I do. I am pro-defense, but I am anti-war. I am tired of forever wars in this country that go on and on, that are largely driven by petroleum interests and power on a global scale, that are driven by money and corporations, and not actually keeping peace as a true global power should do. Isn't that what we should demand? Yes. Programs like USAID, they're soft power. We don't need to spend $2 billion a day in Iran, especially at the expense of you and I, our friends, our neighbors, our families, 77,000 Montanans at risk of being cut from Medicaid and Medicare, rural hospitals being slashed out of our networks, heat costs on the rise by 39% over the last 3 years, education that drowns people in student debt for decades, small businesses under collapse because we give corporations free rein. This is the reality of the new America. That's not the country that I fought to defend. We should demand better. And it starts by holding those in charge accountable. President Trump is out of his mind. There's mental cognitive tests that need to be done on a regular basis for anyone who has the authority to put boots on the ground or missiles in the air, period. And finally, this $1 trillion budget far exceeds any amount of money that we should ever spend on defense. It eclipses the next lowest country by 4 times, China. And we want to raise it to $1.5 trillion? Are you kidding me? Imagine what we could do with that $500 billion in this country. Imagine what we could do with 750 billion or $1 trillion. The cost of universal health care in this country is $1.3 trillion. And not a single person would have to pay a dime into that, yet we spend it on dropping bombs on other countries. I say no more, and with your help, we can turn the tides and stop being the country that's been in conflict for 93% of our existence, and I think it can start this election. Thanks.
Matt?
So this is a question that, I mean, it hits me hard because I've been there. Not many people have. We have a lot of soldiers been to war zones. That's amazing. I respect that. I did my time. I was in Iraq for a year. I've deployed. I know what it's like every day feeling like it could be the end. Mortars going off. I've worked at the tactical level with the units at the battalion, and then I was up a division as a liaison officer. I understand the ramifications of the decisions that go on over there. I understand the ramifications of the shit show that's going on that we did in Iran and how it was not planned in any way, shape, or form. From experience. We talk about USAID. I've been there. I've seen the faces of the kids in Africa that are receiving that aid. I know the impacts of it. I've been in the slums of Kibera in Kenya, 1 million people in 1 square kilometer. I've seen a small school of girls that were trying to get out of those slums and the effects of the support the United States has given. It's personal to me. I've been in Afghanistan doing more projects up in the mountains, working in areas that they had to like do a 5-year project. NGOs up there building agriculture in the top of a mountain for a tribe so they didn't have to travel 2 days by donkey to get to a market. This is the question that really, really affects me. I gave 4 years of my life because I give a damn about every aspect of this. The war, the atrocities, having lost friends. My West Point team leader, he died in Iraq, IED. This atrocity in Iran, and the thing is this has happened. We've got 2 more years of this. We don't know what's coming down the pipeline. That's what scares me. And that is why we absolutely need people in Congress that understand the ramifications and can stand up before this shit happens, can get in front of it because they know firsthand the consequences. So, yeah, this is important, but we're in this for the future. And the future is going to get ugly if we don't have people that know how this plays out.
Gentlemen, I had a question on tariffs, but I think I'm going to skip over that. I think I know where you stand on that, because I want to get to a couple of domestic issues that I think would be important for the folks in here, okay? The first one is related to deficit spending and the national debt. Our national debt is more than $39 trillion and steadily rising because we don't have any way to pay for the war, so let's just keep printing money. We pay around $1 trillion a year to service this debt. If divided among all adults over 18 in this country, each would owe more than $140,000. So the question, and we'll start with you, Ryan. We all have to balance our checkbooks and live within a budget. So how do you propose to get control of this huge national debt and force this country to live within its means?
Yeah, two ways, you know, you've got supply, which is taxation, income, and we have largely an income system and a wealth disparity system in this country that's immoral. Many of the billionaires pay an effective rate. We have about almost 1,000 billionaires in this country now, many of them essentially operate on passive income. They pay no income tax. There are all sorts of loopholes for wealthy people like hedge fund managers who make hundreds of millions of dollars a year, who utilize this little trick that their lobbyists got in the system for them called a carried interest loophole. They pay a flat 10% tax on their income. I would hazard a guess to say there's nobody in this audience that pays none or a flat 10% on their income. My point here is that we have an immoral taxation system that must be remedied so that everybody pays their fair share in this country. Elon Musk and all the other billionaires, they have the same cap on their Social Security contributions as all of you do. Elon Musk takes almost everybody in Montana all year. In fact, most people never get to that $180,000 cap. Elon Musk hits it in about 5 seconds of January 1. That's a moral thing that's there because of lobbyists who have put that in the system. Then we have to trim, so we have the supply side that we can do a lot better, and we must trim wasteful expense where we can, and Democrats need to lead the charge on this. We can't just always argue for more government. We should argue for better, more efficient government. Not like Doge. There was efficiency in the Doge moniker. That wasn't about efficiency, that was about terrorizing your tool, government. We should demand better government. And healthcare is a really good place to start. We're spending twice as much money per capita on each person in the country on healthcare and getting far worse results. That's an inefficient system. Much of our healthcare expense is spent through the government, through Medicare, Medicaid, an inefficient system. So there are many, many ways that we can make our country more efficient and our spending more efficient, but it's going to take somebody brave, somebody willing to buck the system, somebody willing to nudge other Democrats to do it, and somebody willing to challenge the wealth disparity in this country, and it has to happen. It has to happen now, yesterday, if not sooner. So I'm dedicated to doing that. And I know you screwed up the time there, Mike, so I'm not going to take up the whole next minute.
You're just too darn observant, yeah. What you are. Russ?
Yeah, I can tell you, almost 10 years in finance, managing a budget that was nearly $500 million, this is something I have direct experience in. And it's important in this moment because we're accruing nearly $1 trillion in debt every 3 to 4 months in this country. Our debt service, like was mentioned, we're paying over $1 trillion in interest just to service the $39 trillion that we have in debt. We haven't seen a positive deficit since the Clinton administration. And so the debt load that we're going to hand down to my kids' generation and their generation is going to be into the $60, $80, $100 trillion. And we are already insolvent as a country. That means our debts outweigh our assets. So as a homeowner, as a car owner, whatever you might be in this audience, imagine that if you owed $500,000 on a home that was only worth $300,000, do you think the bank would keep giving you money? No, they would laugh in your face. It's time to start addressing the issue. And there's some key areas we need to do that we have not done right in over 50 years. The first is, can we please start taxing the billionaires appropriately? Just a 5% wealth tax on those 989 folks would absolutely move the needle in the other direction and would allow us to pay for things like universal health care and universal child care. We also need a stock trading tax. A 0.1% tax would also create hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue a year for a 0.1% day trading tax for those folks that are moving the needle on Wall Street, making hundreds of thousands of dollars a week. We also need to hold our corporations accountable. The top 86 corporations in this country last year, you want to know how much they paid in corporate tax? Zero. Less than any of you in this audience. The system is rigged. We live in a corporatocracy. And it's time to move the needle back. It's time to start paying our debts. And it's time to hold ourselves accountable to those debts and start taxing people fairly, especially at the top.
Matt.
Isn't it interesting that for years and years and years we've heard the Republicans say the Democrats just want to get it and spend their money, right? I mean, pretty sure everyone in here would raise their hand and vote for fiscal responsibility from our government. That is absolutely where we stand. What this administration is doing, they are writing checks. I mean, we're at trillions of dollars, and the big, beautiful bill, I mean, they blew right by it. Didn't hear so much about fiscal responsibility with it. And we talk about national security. I mean, they're all worked up over the Sheep Creek mine and how, you know, the nation needs to get in there and start mining. What about the interest on our national debt? To me, that's the biggest national security issue we have out there. We are selling our soul to other countries that are just collecting that up. China, holding vast majority of our debt. That is a national security issue that we have to get under control. And the way that this administration, I mean, Trump's bankrupt about every business that he's ever had. Kind of seems like he's going for the United States next. We have to get back in there and put a checks and balance. And then we have to start putting the investments in the right direction, our infrastructure. There's so much lacking, and right now, this administration just wants to get on Fox News and have their interviews, and that's where the big splashes come from, and that's when they spend money, and they have their war, and they get out there, and that shit has to stop. We have to get back to the boring essentials of government. You get in there, you get elected, you close the goddamn door, and you get to work. That's the rancher in me. That's what I'm offering here, because we have so many needs. We absolutely have so many needs in this nation, in Montana right now, and we just need somebody who will prioritize the right job for the people, spend a lot less time doing interviews and a lot more time getting down and getting work done. Thank you.
Sam.
So just about as important as what we are spending our money on as a country is where that money comes from. Because we have urgent needs when people are struggling to afford housing and healthcare and childcare, when we are looking at a two-thirds staffing reduction in some of our public lands agencies. And we have an urgent need to get at the obscene concentration of wealth and power in this country. Not just in this country, in Congress itself. Right now, if you're one of the top 400 earners in this country, you are paying an effective income tax rate of 4%, sometimes as little as zero. And when I was working as a smoke jumper, 36% of every paycheck went to taxes and all the rest. And taxes serve two purposes. They generate the revenue that we need to pay for these programs, and also they help make sure that we are moving wealth in the direction that it needs to move. So I agree with Russ, we need a 5% tax on wealth over $1 billion, because it does not serve the public interest to have individuals like Elon Musk who are sitting on obscene amounts of wealth and then turning around and using that wealth to try and buy up our elections. We need a, yes. We need a minimum effective income tax rate of 30% on all kinds of income. And when I say all kinds of income over $1 million, that means getting rid of the capital gains loophole. That means taxing unrealized gains. That means it does not matter where your income comes from. You should not be paying a lower tax rate if you get it from the stock market than if you are getting it from wages that you are earning working day in and day out. That is common sense. That is good governance. That is how we get the resources that we need to pay for these programs without going further into debt and borrowing on future generations. We have accepted a Congress that is all too willing to do that for far too long. And if we want to make sure that we are solving this problem, we also need to get people to Congress who know what it is like to be on the wrong side of that system, because today, the average congressperson is worth about 15 times more than the average American. You want to know why there's a lack of urgency at addressing that obscene disparity of income and wealth in this country? It's because the people who are sitting in the halls of power, far too few of them, know what it is like to be on the wrong end of a broken system of taxation or housing or healthcare or childcare, and you can bet your tail I will fight like hell to fix that, because I know what that is like.
Well, gentlemen, I have more questions, but we've run out of time because you need some time to make a closing statement. So before you make your closing statement, I'd like to thank all four of you for being here, being so eloquent in your answers and direct. I appreciate that very much. Let's start with Ryan.
Well, I think we should be honest with each other about what's on the line in this election and what you're all here trying to do, assess who's going to be your representative, what we're doing, interviewing for a job. The future of our democracy and our state could very well run through what we're doing here today, what we're doing. Winning this seat or not could determine whether we take back the majority in the House of Representatives. All this stuff that we talked about, we don't take back the House and exercise oversight and stand up and represent folks like all of you and my kids and my family. Truth is, the next 2 years in this country are going to be very, very dark, as if the last couple of years haven't been dark. So this is a serious thing we're doing. I see some supporters of mine here from when I ran for governor, and I want to say thank you very much. It means a lot, that support you showed us, and we ran hard during that election. It's a hard thing to do, hardest thing statistically to do in American politics is take on an incumbent governor, especially a self-funding incumbent governor. But I felt like that was a hard job that needed to be done, so we ran hard. We held 187 in-person events. We did some stuff right, we did some stuff wrong. But I've learned what it takes to win, and just like other people who have won in this state, people like Brian Schweitzer, who lost his first election, he was smart enough to not waste what he had built. He took what he had built, what people like you helped me build, and he put it to work to win the next election. That's what he told me just after the disaster that we felt in November of 2024. I still see my stickers around town here, and that means a lot. I want you to know I know that I owe it to all of you to go win this thing, to take what we've built, put the momentum on the road, and go take on whoever wins the Republican side. It will be a knife fight. It will be a blood battle over there. It will be hard, but we have momentum. You've helped us build something. I owe this state something that's made me a better person, and I want you to know better times are coming. I can feel it in the wind. I know all of you can too. We're about ready to plant a blue flag here in western Montana, something we haven't done for a little while, but you're going to wake up on a Wednesday after a Tuesday in November this year, and it's going to feel way better than it did in 2024. Just think of that for a second, how hopeful that would be. I'd be honored to be your representative. Let's go get this thing done.
Russ.
Yeah, I mentioned I've been on this journey now in this campaign for going on 395 days, over 55,000 miles driven all over Montana, tens of thousands of conversations, listening to hear, not to speak, building a platform off of those conversations, not my own experience, but what people were asking for. Not so that I could get this position for some title, for some paycheck, but to create real lasting change that people are hungry for. And I truly believe that this is the year that we can do that. I'm doing this because of passion. Passion that was inspired by being that E4 flight line supervisor that was being ordered to fly every bird that we had off the flight line, not for some mission, but because we needed to burn jet fuel so we could get the money back the next year. That's waste. Passion as a small business owner that was trying to take care of my 200 employees when COVID tried to shut everything down and putting them first so that they could continue to put food on their table. Passion as a dad sitting inside that hospital room holding my little girl's hand as she took her final breath, losing her fight to one of the nastiest diseases that just last year, pediatric cancer research, was one of the first things that DOGE cuts through their NIH cuts. That is why I'm in this race. Not to go take a position in Washington, D.C., to take a desk, but to fight for real change. Change that we all deserve. Accountability, integrity, trust. Those are the things that we should be voting on. We all have great ideas. We all have different experiences. But this election is different. We have to think about who can win in November, who's done the work on the ground, and I'm proud to have been doing this for over a year now, building that trust in communities all across Montana to finally connect our rural dots back to our blue dots and start taking care of Montana again. I can't wait to make Montana purple again. Thank you for putting your trust in me. Let's take it back. I'm Russ Cleveland, and I appreciate your vote. Thank you.
Matt.
So I got into this race because of the urgency of the moment. I don't trust 2028. This is the time, the opportunity we have to flip this seat. And to me, I mean, I left my job at Farmers Union. I've put my ranch on hold as much as I can because, truth be told, in the last 46 years since I was born, 1980, Democrats have only won a federal seat one time, when it's been open or held by a Republican. We can hold a seat if we get somebody elected. But if we're going up against an open seat or a Republican, in 46 years, we've only won one time. And we've had some incredible candidates. We've lost 29 times. Our one victory was Senator Tester in 2006. Yeah, I mean, we got him in there and he gave us 18 years. That is the value of somebody who can connect in Montana like he did. And to me, that's the approved solution. The only way right now when we have Sheehy, Daines, Downing, Gianforte, all coming in to pitch for most likely Flint. Trump's going to come in It's going to be a bloodbath for a general. We need the kryptonite to the GOP, and we have Senator Tester. To me, is that approved solution? And so I'm honored to be in this race. I'm a rancher, fourth generation, West Point, served in the military, served overseas, was all over the world, came back, worked Montana Farmers Union, brought jobs, revenue to our local ranchers and farmers. To me, that is the type of pedigree, profile, resume that will connect across the political spectrum here. And if you guys are worried about 2028 as much as I am, we need to make sure that we elect a candidate in this general that can flip this seat. Thank you.
Sam.
All of us agree that there is an urgency to this moment. And what are all of these debates about? They're about policy, but they're also about how do we actually win? How do we actually offer a plan to deliver on that policy? Because if you are somebody like Debbie over King Arthur, if you're somebody like me over the last 10 years who's been struggling just to afford a roof over my head, if you are somebody like most of this state that is falling further behind while costs go up and wages do not keep up, you bet your tail there's an urgency to this moment. And that urgency does not exist right now in the halls of Congress. So how do we fix that? We rebuild the kind of coalition that we used to have as a party. When we would win elections, we have to rebuild a coalition of working people, folks making under $100,000 a year, most of whom voted for Republicans, union members, about half of whom did not vote for Democrats last year, or a lot of young folks who stayed home or swung to the right because they did not see cause for hope in a politics that seemed to be so based on anger and not on solutions. And a lot of the solutions that we've been talking about up here, they are big and they are bold because that is what this moment demands, but so many of them are not new. And I've been thinking a lot about history in the course of this campaign, and we used to send leaders to Washington from this state not so long ago who swung above their weight class, who bent the course of this country for the better, people like Jeanette Rankin, who changed the way this country conceives of who can be a congressperson, people like Lee Metcalf, who changed the way that we manage our public lands for the better, and people like Mike Mansfield or Pat Williams, who took their experience as a working person in Butte and brought it to Washington to carry out so many of the programs that we depend on today, to carry out the programs of the great society, like Medicare and Medicaid, NPR and PBS, and all of those programs are the things that are under attack, and all of those are the things that we urgently need to build and expand if we want to make sure that every working person in this country can earn a life of dignity for themselves, for their families. That is the way out of this thing. So thus far, I'm building a coalition that includes not just Bernie Sanders and AOC, who are supporting this campaign, that includes not just a dozen or so unions from across the state and across the country who are supporting this campaign because they are ready to be part of this coalition again, that includes over 30 Montana elected officials from both parties, including four Republicans, because those are the folks that we need to talk to and say that this is the place where we will actually fight to tackle the obscene concentration of wealth, to tackle campaign finance reform, to make life better for every working person. We can do that again as a country and as a state, and I would love your help with that. Thank you.
You have been listening to KGVM Bozeman, presenting a forum featuring Democratic candidates for Montana's Western House District, which took place on May 7th, 2026.